We're joined now in the studio by State Senator Greg Meyer from Orange County to catch us up and give us an update on some of the bigger developments in Raleigh right now. Senator Meyer, thank you so much for being with us today.
And I'm so glad to be here. And you're doing such a great job on the morning show. When I hear that, "Oh, mama, come on," I just think about what a wonderful job you've done taking over, and that when Ron Stutz hears that metal kick in, he's got to just smile knowing that you're doing such a good job.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Good to be back with you.
So let's start by talking about the bill that is kind of in the headlines today, which is the updated version of Senate Bill 90, which I've been trying to explain what this bill does, but it's like 15 different things, and it's all dealing with restrictions on libraries and schools and giving parents more opportunity to file legal challenges against school officials and school boards. What should we know about this bill, and more importantly, does it have a chance of passing?
Look, this is a Moms for Liberty bill, and for those folks who don't pay attention to the current culture wars around school politics, Moms for Liberty are the people who want to take any sort of reference to diversity or any sort of teaching of appropriate adolescent developmental education, i.e. sex education. I mean, they want to get rid of all of the things in our schools that are designed to help kids to become truly, well-formed, well-rounded adults. I mean, they fight against things like programs that are designed for student counseling and social-emotional development. I mean, they are really just against everything. And if you put this bill in historical context, this is a bill that has provisions that seem like the types of things that white parents use to fight against integration after Brown versus Board. It is really an attempt to just break apart public schools piece by piece, including giving parents the independent authority to fire a school district superintendent. I mean, there's stuff in this is just absurd. Now, we should be horrified at the fact that any elected official would propose things like this, but I do not believe that this bill will become law. When I saw this bill come forward, I thought, this is a couple people's junk pile of bad ideas, not something that I think the entire General Assembly will pass.
On the outside looking in, how can we tell the difference between a bill that is likely to pass versus one that isn't?
I mean, the easiest way is if you kind of know who has power and who doesn't. Like, is the bill sponsored by a committee chair versus by a backbencher? Mm-hmm. However, this doesn't fall into that category. What happened here is that the House took a Senate bill sponsored by the Senate Education Chair. So you think, okay, well, this Senate Education Chair is pretty powerful. But this is a case where the House is hijacking a Senate bill. And the way you know that is through these three code letters called PCS, which is a proposed committee substitute, which means the committee replaces the contents of the old bill with what contents they want. And sometimes you can't tell until you see the committee meeting itself who is actually doing the committee substitute. But in most cases, it is the committee chairs. And so here it is the House Education Committee chairs that are likely the ones who are backing these provisions. But the House Education Committee chairs this year have put forward a ton of bad ideas that haven't been able to proceed. And so you have to know enough about kind of what's happening internal to the General Assembly, or you have to know the right observers and commentators who can fill you in on it. And it's not easy. Really, there's a lot of things about our legislative process that seem like they're intentionally designed to make it harder for the public to follow, and this is a good example.
Well, we thank you for coming in and clarifying that, because again, like, on the outside, I have no idea.
I mean, look, you're the man that teaches a political science class.
Right,
it shouldn't
right.
require a PhD to be able to understand and see what your legislature
apparently
is doing.
It requires more than a PhD, because I have that and I still don't know.
It's absurd.
People also think, oh, you're a journalist, you're in the news, you must have all this inside information. Not really, not all the time.
It actually strikes me a lot. I had a conversation earlier this week that even journalists who work inside the legislature don't have all the information often. And I'm like, wait, how do you not know this thing? But it's because I hear it because I'm talking to other legislators or whatever, and the journalists only ever hear it if they talk to us. They're often observing things rather than actually having the conversations until they do interview us. But yeah, there's, I don't know what you get for 10 years in the legislature that's other than a PhD, but I've learned a lot, and a lot of it's disturbing.
We're speaking with State Senator Greg Meyer. I feel like we shouldn't be laughing at that, but you know,
man,
such is life.
You've got to laugh to get through. It's been a year with a lot of tears, so there's got to laugh when I can.
There are three anti-LGBTQ bills that did pass the General Assembly that got vetoed by Governor Cooper and are now back in the General Assembly for a veto override, but there's been a little bit of a delay on the override vote, so where does that stand?
Yes, I mean, this is a case of, like I just said, there's been a lot of tears this year. Like, I can't believe how hateful some of these anti-LGBT bills are. These, I mean, in fact, of how it will directly impact people's lives, these bills are more harmful than House Bill 2 was. And the legislature seems quite intent on just moving along and passing them. I do think that the vetoes will get overridden on these. Now, why have they not been overridden yet? Well, part of it is because the bills didn't get passed until right before we were about to go on 4th of July break. And now it appears that the Senate, at least, is going to be on a break until sometime in mid to late August. So the veto overrides will likely come later. But, you know, hopefully that allows some time for pressure to mount and maybe in one chamber or the other to find somebody who refuses to override the vetoes. But I've got to say the Republicans are pretty locked in this year, and I don't know where they would find, I don't know where we would find leverage on a Republican who wouldn't vote to override, given how the debate went on the bills the first times they went through. It'll really be terrible for North Carolina to be such a hateful state as to have these bills put into law. I mean, it really will be hateful directly towards people of our state.
What can you do? What do you do in the legislature to try to move the dial on that?
There have been years where we've been able to build coalitions across the aisle to work on issues like this and prevent some bad stuff from happening. But those coalitions have largely dissipated this year as many of the moderate Republicans that I started with have been replaced by people who are much more MAGA. And so it's a lot harder. And these bills they've been vetted and they've been passed through both caucuses to the point that you know, once they get this far, that everybody's signed on, even if some people might privately tell us that they're holding their nose. But the Republicans control with such force that if somebody was to break ranks and split on one of these, they would have to pay major internal consequences. That, I mean, back to the point about what people don't see, there's a lot of things that happen where it's really about the internal pressure to hold people accountable to their party. And for example, yesterday I tweeted that there was a quote from Speaker Tim Moore in the newspaper about the medical marijuana bill, where he admitted something that we've known for a long time but has never been, as far as I know, publicly admitted to before, which is that they don't put a bill onto the floor for a vote unless they've already voted on it in their caucus and they know they have a majority of their majority. So they're only going to put a bill up to vote for if they know they're going to pass it. They don't have that right now on medical marijuana, even though if they did put it on the floor with the Democratic votes, it would pass widely. But that's the type of pressure that they use to make sure that whatever gets voted on is exactly what they want as part of their agenda. So let's be clear. These anti-LGBTQ bills, specifically the anti-trans bill that's about minors' access to any type of gender-affirming medical care, this is a core part of the entire Republican Party's belief system and their political agenda right now. This is not some right-wing, far, you know, radical MAGA agenda. This is all of them.
Speaking with State Senator Greg Meyer, and I'm glad you brought up medical marijuana because I was going to go to that next, because there is bipartisan support for that, just not enough, apparently, to get it to the floor.
Yeah, I mean, there's huge bipartisan support. There's huge public support right now. I'm polling. It looks like about 80% of North Carolinians believe we should have some form of medical marijuana. I believe we should have fully legalized and regulated marijuana. And I think there's some things that need to be better in this bill. The bill itself is not perfect. But the whole reason why we're not making progress on this is because a group of Republicans are blocking it inside their caucus. And it's interesting because it's been a real battle between the House and the Senate, with the second most powerful senator, Rules Chairman Bill Rabin, flexing some real muscle to try to get the House to take it through. But whatever the resistance is among House members, it's got installed.
There's also disagreement between Senate and House Republicans on a budget, and because of that, we still don't have a budget 2 weeks into the fiscal year.
And this one is crazy. Like, first of all, it's just crazy that we don't have a budget, right? I mean, all school finance officers are asking me, what are the teacher pay raises going to be? When are we going to be able to enact our new budgets? I mean, this is nuts. It's no way to run a government. But here's what's even more crazy. Let me tell you the real reason why the House and the Senate are deadlocked over the budget. There's two major things going on. One is the Senate has this absolutely huge tax cut plan that would essentially keep our taxes at the same level as they are today for the next 10 years, the tax revenues, even as the state will likely grow 10 to 15% in population. And so they're going to hamstring government. And a few years down the road, the fiscal projections show that there'll be a deficit because we won't, with the giant tax cuts, won't allow us to have enough money to even meet our basic bills. If they pass that budget and the governor vetoes it, they actually might not be able to override that veto because there are a couple in the House. There's two specific House Republicans who are really clear fiscal hawks, and they will not pass a budget that has a structural deficit in it. And so then they wouldn't have enough votes for the veto override. That would be one of the rare instances where they would struggle to hold their own caucus together on a veto override. So they're trying to figure out how do they fill this giant budget hole that they create by giving this giant tax giveaway to corporations and to rich folks. And of course, they always want to do that by transferring wealth from poor folks to rich folks. So what they're working on is something that's never been debated in any committee. They're trying to figure out whether they can have a plan to bring 5 casinos to North Carolina and legalize video poker so that they would fill the budget hole with gambling in North Carolina.
I'm actually in favor of that.
In favor,
I'm with them on that one little provision.
As someone who just got back from Vegas.
That's correct, yeah.
In favor or not, that type of major policy decision shouldn't be dropped into a conference report on the budget with no amendments, no conversation, no committee. I mean, look at how much work we've put into medical marijuana and stalled out on that, and then all of a sudden they're just going to bring the win and Harrah's into, I guess we already have a Harrah's at Cherokee.
We do have a Harrah's, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it's fascinating to me that they want to be Nevada.
And in the meantime, the longer we go without a budget, the longer we go without Medicaid expansion, which is another thing that we agreed on and haven't happened yet.
And as soon as we do get Medicaid expansion, we start getting $500 million a month from the federal government for healthcare. Hey, I'd like to have my tax money back, please. $500 million a month sounds pretty good. Let's bring it back.
Speaking with State Senator Greg Meyer, again, a lot going on in the General Assembly. We're not going to get to cover all of it, but as we start to wrap up, what else is happening that folks should know about?
I mean, so we're in kind of an extended slow period while they negotiate the budget. I don't know how quickly we'll get done. I don't think it will be before the end of the summer. It could drag into the fall. The other thing that we have to do before we get to December is we have to do redistricting. So I expect we'll continue to be in session for a good portion of the fall, and there will be some big fights to come on the veto overrides, the budget, and redistricting.
Again, we'll keep following all of that and more as bills make their way or don't make their way through the General Assembly in Raleigh. State Senator Greg Meyer, thank you so much for being with us
today.
Glad
to be back, Aaron.